Good evening. If you will, go ahead and open your Bibles up to the book of Ecclesiastes. The book of Ecclesiastes. Most of our passages will come from that book tonight. Well, it seems like it's been a very short week. Time has passed by very quickly, but I sure have enjoyed it. It has been a pleasure to be with y'all this week. Been a pleasure to be in Auburn and get to see the city. I really like the city. I've heard good things about it and how beautiful the campus was and how nice the city was, and I found that to be very true. But most of all, I've enjoyed being with you this week. And I really, really do appreciate the invitation. I hope to have some more things to say about that after the lesson. When I was in junior high, Joey Vesey was the Fonz of Thomas J. Russ Middle School. He was the epitome of coolness. Just everything he did. He had the looks, he had the swagger, he had the girls. And I was kind of like Potsy, you know. I just kind of hung out close by him and hoped to kind of, some of that coolness would rub off on me. It didn't, but he was just one of those, every boy in junior high wanted to be like him. We tried to wear the same shoes that he wore, you know, and all, we just really looked up to him. He had everything. When we went to high school, he was the freshman guy that was dating the junior and the senior girls. And every boy I know at that school wanted to be like Joey. With 2 weeks left in our freshman year, Joey wrote a note to his parents. He laid it on his bed. And then he laid down next to it and took a loaded handgun and put it to his temple. And pulled the trigger. I don't know what the note said. I don't know what was going on in Joey's life. But I know that every boy there at Nacogdoches High School wanted to be like Joey. They wanted the life that Joey had. Except for Joey. Book of Ecclesiastes deals with a question. A question about life. And it's really a question that I want us to spend our time on this evening. Is life worth living? And there have been a lot of debates about this subject. And a lot of the public debates a lot of times center around things like, well, if a child is born into a family that the child is not wanted by that family, is their life going to be worth living? Or if a child is going to have severe physical disabilities or mental disabilities, is that child's life worth living? Sometimes the debates spill over to the other end of the spectrum. Here's someone who's maybe advanced in age and has just a lot of suffering, a lot of pain, a lot of problems. Is that life worth living? But in most of the public debates that I've heard about this, or discussions that I've heard about this, it seems like that it's always concerning the physical quality of life and whether that life is worth living. Rarely do I hear discussions where it's talking about the meaning or purpose of life, and if life is worth living because of its meaning or its purpose. Solomon was an interesting character, unique in a lot of ways from 99.9% of the rest of the world's population. Solomon was given great wisdom by God. And he was not only blessed with having greater wisdom than all other men, he was also blessed with living in a time of peace and extreme prosperity. Very wealthy. I tell you that because what he is going to tell us is not something that we would maybe be able to find out with our circumstances. Solomon conducted a great experiment. And the experiment was to figure out, what is life all about? Is life really worth it or not? And Solomon had the resources to really conduct this experiment properly. In Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 3, what does it profit a man from all of his labor in which he toils under the sun? What's it all about? Is it worth it or not? You're going to have to go through this life. You're going to have to work and labor in this life. Is it worth it? Is life worth living? So, he conducts this experiment. What he's going to do is he's just going to try out different things and say, well, maybe this is what gives life purpose and value. Maybe this is what gives life the true meaning. And this would make life worth living. And so he goes through, and I'm just going to go ahead and tell you the conclusion before we even get into the lesson. What Solomon ends up discovering from this grand experiment is that there is a life that is worth living, but there is also a life that is not worth living. Maybe I could word it a different way. There is a way to live your life that is worth it. And there is a way not to live your life, or a way to live your life that will make it where it's not worth it. And he's going to show us that as we go through the book of Ecclesiastes. First, let's talk about the life that is not worth living. Solomon, being given wisdom by God, also had a fascination and a desire to obtain more wisdom, and he spent a lot of his time pursuing that and doing that. And yet one of the things that we see, the conclusions that he come to, is that a life of pursuit of worldly wisdom is not worth it. Notice in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, let's start reading in verse 12. Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 12. I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I set my heart to seek and search out wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This grievous task God has given the sons of man, by which they may be exercised. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun. Indeed, all is vanity and grasping for the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight. What is lacking cannot be numbered. I communed with my heart, saying, look, I have obtained greatness. I have gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge, and I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly, and I perceived that this also is grasping for the wind. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. So here's Solomon, he's saying, here's what I set out to do. To obtain wisdom, surely in wisdom and worldly wisdom is the key to the purpose of life and the meaning of life and the value of life. And yet he concludes and says, I perceive this also as grasping for the wind. And actually it brings about its own problems and its own sorrows and its own difficulties. Look in chapter 2 and verse 12. Chapter 2 and verse 12. Then I turned to consider wisdom, madness, and folly. For what can a man do? What can the man do who succeeds the king? Only what has already been done. Then I saw that wisdom excels folly, as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Yet I myself perceive that the same event happens to them all. Now, do you understand what he's saying here? He's saying, as I'm considering this, yes, there is some value to wisdom. Wisdom is to be preferred over being foolish. At the same time, when you boil it all down, at the end, the same thing happens to the wise man as happens to the fool. So, I said in my heart, as it happens to the fool, it also happened to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart, this also is vanity. For there is no more remembrance of the wise than the fool forever, since all that now is will be forgotten in the days to come. And how does the wise man die? As the fool. And so again, he's looking at this and he's saying, well, I can see some temporary value to this, but in the end result, the wise man doesn't continue to live and the fool dies. No, the wise man dies just as the fool. And the fool is forgotten about and the wise man is forgotten about. It doesn't really seem to matter in that sense. So that doesn't give value to life. That's not something that is enduring in that. So then Solomon decides, well, maybe pleasure is what it's all about. If it's not found in worldly wisdom, maybe the purpose and value of life is found in pleasure. And so you look in chapter 2, in verse 1, and he said, I said to my heart, come now and I will test you with mirth. Therefore enjoy pleasure. But notice his conclusion. But surely this also was vanity. I said, of laughter, it is madness, and of mirth, what does it accomplish? I searched my heart, how to gratify my flesh with wine while guiding my heart with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their life. And so he said, here's what I'm going to try. I'm just going to try everything that I think would bring me pleasure. If it's wine, if it's something else that tends to gratify my flesh, then I will do that. Drop down and look at in chapter 2 at verse 8. And in the latter part of verse 8. I acquired male and female singers, the delights of the sons of men, and musical instruments of all kinds. You know, this was the ancient booze acoustical sound machine here. He's got the surround sound. He brought in the very best of human entertainment. Maybe it's in pleasure. Maybe if I surround myself with just the very best of life, the most gratifying things in life, that will give me my meaning. Look at verse 9. I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also remained in me. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all of its labor, and this was my reward from all of my labor. Okay. Do you understand why Solomon is unique in being able to conduct this experiment? Solomon is unique, and if I said, okay, well, I'll tell you what, if I could just pursue every pleasure in life, then I'm sure that I would find happiness in that. I'm kind of limited in my resources. I'm not going to be able to bring in all of the male and female singers and the delights of the sons of men and musical instruments. I don't have the resources to do that. Solomon did. And so he tries it. Oh, this is the latest and greatest thing. Oh, if I had this. And so he acquires it. He brings it in. Oh, if I had that woman. You remember how many wives and concubines he ended up with total? He tried it. What was it? There's some temporary gratification in that. But it's vanity. That's not where it's at. And he sees that. He understands that. So maybe it is in something. If it's not in earthly wisdom, if it's not in pleasures in life, maybe somehow it is in the accomplishment, in the journey of building and progressing and doing more and acquiring more. And so he sets his heart to do that. In chapter 2 and verse 4, I made my works great. I built myself houses. I planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards, and I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. Can you picture, have you ever thought about what you would do if you had unlimited resources? What kind of house you would have? You ever thought about, oh, and then what I would do is I would expand it. I'd have a golf course right there in my backyard. My own personal golf course. And I would build this, and so here he is, and his mind is just, you know, this creative mind is just going crazy. And he just keeps building and adding and adding, and we read about the palace that he built for himself there in Jerusalem after he had finished the temple and all of the projects that he had going on. And here is a guy that just says, maybe the whole purpose, maybe the Pharaohs had it right. The idea is to build the biggest stuff, have the biggest stuff, and then that's what life is all about. So he's pursuing this, and he's going after this, and he's trying all these different things. Now, notice when we get down to, we mentioned in verse 9, so I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. But he discovered there's some problems with that. You look in chapter 4 and verse 4, and here's what he says. Again, I saw that for all toil and every skillful work, a man is envied by his neighbor. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind. You know, we have an expression in the United States talking about keeping up with the Joneses. And so we want to have this, you know, we want to have this BMW so that people will look and go, wow, boy, he's really achieved something. Look what he's got. He must be doing well. We want to have a big, nice house. And then what Solomon says is, okay, you get this to impress people, and then guess what? People don't like you for it. They envy you for it. So here I am, I'm working so hard and trying so hard to have this and to do this, and then people don't even like me for it. It creates problems. chapter 6 and verse 7. Not only does it create problems, it doesn't satisfy. All the labor of a man is for his mouth, yet his soul is not satisfied. Emptiness. I've worked. Oh, I'm going to have this. Can you imagine, boy, once we get this spread out, we're going to have an orchard out here and some fountains over here, and that's going to be beautiful. I'm going to be able to sit out here in the evening, and it's going to be no satisfaction for the soul. No meaning. No purpose. Doesn't fulfill man's longing in life. Turn back to chapter 2. What happens when you work and you work and you work and you're striving for something and you're saying, okay, this is what's going to do it. This is going to fulfill me. This is going to complete me. And then it doesn't. Let me use this illustration. Here you've got your ladder up against the wall. You're climbing your ladder. You're putting forth the effort. You're working to get up to the ladder. You get to the top of the ladder and you realize, oh no, this was the wrong wall. What happens? Let's read. Verse 17 of chapter 2. Therefore I hated life, because the work that was done under the sun was grievous to me. For all is vanity and grasping for the wind. Then I hated all my labor in which I had toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to a man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool. And yet he will rule over all of my labor in which I have toiled, in which I have shown myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. Therefore I turned my heart and despaired of all the labor in which I had toiled under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is with wisdom and knowledge and skill, and yet he must leave his heritage to a man who has not labored for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. For what has man for all of his labor and for all of his striving of his heart which he has toiled under the sun? For all his days are sorrowful and his work grievous. Even the night his heart takes no rest. This also is vanity. Can you hear the disappointment there? I've worked so hard and I've put everything into this and with wisdom and I've labored and built this up and I have this accomplishment. And yet I can't take it with me. I have to leave it to somebody who may not have any wisdom and certainly hasn't worked for it. This isn't right. This was the wrong wall. I climbed the ladder leaning against the wrong wall. Luke chapter 12 and verse 20. You don't have to turn over there. You remember the parable about the rich fool? He had had a bumper crop, tore down his barns, built bigger barns. Take ease, soul. You've got everything you need for a long time. And yet, God said to him, fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? Solomon came to that conclusion before the day that God said, this night your soul will be required. He already recognized, wait a minute. I have all of this, but I can't take it with me. I'm going to have to leave it to somebody else. And that is the way it is with human accomplishments and the things in this life. One more, and it really goes along with that. Solomon, obviously, in all this, pursued earthly riches. Now, God had blessed him greatly with this. In chapter 2 and verse 7, we already saw there at the end, that he had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before him. Verse 8, I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the precious treasures of kings and of the provinces. As a matter of fact, we read in other places where during the days of Solomon, silver was so common it was as if the stones on the ground. It was a very prosperous time. Silver wasn't even accounted as worth much. Very prosperous time. Solomon said, I had all of it. I was greater than anybody in the region. Look in chapter 5. Look in chapter 5 and verse 10. Here's what Solomon concluded about that. He who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver, nor he who loves abundance with increase. This also is vanity. When goods increase, they increase who eat them. So what profit have the owners except to see them with their eyes? The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eats little or much. But the abundance of the rich will not permit him to sleep. There's a severe evil which I have seen under the sun, riches kept for their owner to his hurt. But those riches perish through some misfortune. Then he begats a son, and there is nothing in his hand. He came from his mother's womb naked, and naked shall he return. To go as he came, and he shall take nothing from his labor, which he may carry in his hand. And this also is a severe evil, that just exactly as he came, so shall he go. And what profit has he who has labored for the wind? Okay, again, why Solomon can pull this experiment off and I can't. Because there's this temptation. I'll just tell you, if my wife wins Publisher's Clearinghouse, that $5,000 a week for the rest of your life, pretty sure I'm going to be content. What are my chances of winning that? I'm not counting on it. So here's the thing. I can fool myself my whole life saying, boy, if I just had that, then I'd be content. That would really give my life meaning and purpose. I'd be satisfied then. That would really mean something. I'm never going to have that. So I can deceive myself with that lie my whole life. Solomon had it, and Solomon said, let me tell you, you may never have this, but I promise you it will not satisfy you. If you are the wealthiest man on earth, you will not be satisfied with your silver and your gold. It's not trustworthy. It's not dependable. It doesn't give meaning to life. That's what he's telling us. Are we going to believe him or not? Or are we going to continue the futile search? Well, if I just had a little bit more, I think that would do it. And that's where most people are at with these things. He also makes the point here. We already kind of covered this with human accomplishments. You can't take it with you. You've heard the expression before that hearse don't have U-Hauls behind them. You're not going to be able, whatever you gain here upon this earth, you're going to have to leave it here. It's not going to go with you. And so Solomon is looking at this and saying, if there's no enduring value to this, if there's no eternal value to this, then again, it's the wrong wall. We're climbing a ladder that's leaned against the wrong wall if we think that earthly riches are going to give us what life is about. Now, here's the interesting thing. When you look at this list, isn't this the list that most of us are striving for? Aren't these things the things that most people are striving for, that they want? You look at the average American, and you look at the different stages of life, and it seems like that in different stages of life, they are pursuing or striving at least for one of these, maybe more than one. Those of you who are in college right now, look around at your peers in college. What are most college kids pursuing? Well, it could be earthly wisdom. You know, they're trying to gain their education, trying to grow in understanding and knowledge of a lot of things. But it's also pretty common for those in their 20s to be pursuing pleasure with just reckless abandon, trying to find some way to gratify the flesh as if thinking this is what it's about. This must be, it feels pretty good right now, this must be what it's about. But do you know what happens? What typically happens anyway, is that as you get a little bit older, most people who are pursuing that pleasure so recklessly in their 20s, in their college days, suddenly start to realize, you know, this isn't all that it's cracked up to be. I think it'd be better for me to settle down, maybe get married, have a family, start to work on building a portfolio here, get a good job, be able to afford a nice car, build a big house, be able to do this. And so it kind of shifts from, I'm just looking to gratify a physical pleasure, to I want to build great works. I want to build up my company. And I want to build, and so here we go through our 30s and our 40s and maybe on into our 50s, and we're pursuing these earthly achievements. And then there comes some point where maybe that starts to wane a little bit too. Maybe we go back to pursuing earthly wisdom, maybe some other things. But what we see is that our nation is just confident that if we can achieve these things, that we're going to find the value of life. And so we're pursuing them wide open. The irony is the United States of America ranks very high when it comes to depression, anxiety, stress. If this is what life is all about, and we're achieving a lot of these things, then we ought to just be the most happy, fortunate people in the world. And yet, that's not how most Americans feel. And Solomon told us a long time ago, yeah, that's what I'm telling you. That's not it. That's the wrong wall. You're climbing the ladder leaned against the wrong wall. Don't continue to pursue that. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Okay, so we're looking at the book of Ecclesiastes now, and now you are convinced that the book of Ecclesiastes has to be the most depressing book that's ever been written. Well, a lot of it is, because the majority of Solomon's life, he's experimenting with this, and he's finding out, no, this, how depressing, this wasn't it. Oh, I've wasted more time, this is not it. This is not it either. But let me tell you, the book of Ecclesiastes, even though proportionally it's a small section of the book of Ecclesiastes, it's the most important. Solomon really does come to the conclusion that there is a life that is worth living if you live it the right way. Chapter 12. Let's get to the end of the experiment and see what he says. Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 13. Let's hear the conclusion of the whole matter. This is going to be profound. You've got the wisest man that's ever lived. He's conducted this experiment most of his life, and he says, now let me tell you what I've learned. It's going to be profound. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is man's all. It's the whole duty of man. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. Here's what he tells us. A life that is worth living is a life that fears God, that has a reverence for the Almighty. Knowing the greatness of God and knowing and understanding our place before God is what gives life perspective. It's what gives life purpose. It's what gives life meaning. And Solomon is just telling us, look, if you want to live a life that's really worth living, you need to reverence God. You need to fear God. Psalm 33 and verse 8, let all of the earth fear the Lord. Let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of Him. A life that is worth living is a life that not only fears the Lord, but keeps His commandments. Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 2. You shall not add to the word which I command you, nor take from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Lord your God which I command you. John would say in 1 John chapter 5 and verse 3, for this is the love of God, that we keep His commandments, and His commandments are not burdensome. Actually, quite to the contrary. Not only are they not burdensome, they are for our good always. You remember earlier in the week we talked about Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 24, where Moses is talking to the children of Israel. He said, now, I'm instructing you to keep all of these commandments of God for your good always. That's the reason why God's given them to us. You remember we were talking about the way that we view God's commandments, the value of it? Are they just, oh, they're a weariness, they're a burdensome thing to us? Or are they something that we look at and we say, oh, these are sweet to my taste. I love the law of God. It shows me how I'm supposed to walk. It teaches me the purpose in life and the meaning of life. It's for my good. Look over at Psalm 34. Psalm 34. Psalm 34, let's start in verse 11. Come, you children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. Who is the man who desires life and loves many days that he may see good? I just want to tell you, I'm going to raise my hand on that one. Who is the man who desires life and he wants to see good and he wants to be here, he wants to have a good long life. He wants to find meaning and purpose in life. I want that. Here's what he has to say. Keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking guile. Depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. Do you understand what the psalmist is saying there? He says, do you want a life that is fulfilling and meaningful and has purpose, a life that is worth living? Then keep the commandments of God. It's really that simple. It really is that simple. Because this is what it's all about. This is your whole duty. This is what you were created for. You were made in God's image to have a relationship with Him. You have that relationship with Him by a reverence and by an obedience to His instruction. And that's what it's all about. This is man's all. Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 12 and 13. And now, Israel, what does the Lord your God require of you? But to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all of His ways, to love Him, to serve the Lord your God with all of your heart and with all of your soul, and to keep the commandments of the Lord and His statutes, which I command you today, for your good. That's what it's all about. Fear God, keep His commandments for your good. That's what the Lord requires. Micah chapter 6 and verse 8. He has shown you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God? These are saying essentially the same thing. This is what life is all about. Fear God and keep His commandments. And this is really the only thing in life that really, really counts. You remember Jesus saying in Matthew chapter 16 and verse 26, "For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul?" Solomon's great experiment in trying to figure out what really brings purpose and meaning in this life under the sun is a relationship with God. Jesus says, if you gain everything that this life has to offer under the sun and yet you lose your soul, that was a really bad deal. A really bad deal. That's what life is all about. It is really not complicated. It's really that simple. And yet we struggle with it so mightily. The final thought that Solomon leaves us with is our accountability for what we do with this life. You've been given a life to lead, live. And the way that you live it may make it worthwhile or may not make it worthwhile, but you will give an account for it. You will give an account for the life that God has given you to live. Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 14, "For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil." Paul would say in 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 10, "For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive the things done in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad." Let me summarize. A life that is not worth living is a life that is lived for the time here on earth only. You are guaranteed to lose everything if that's the way you live your life. You will lose it all. Matter of fact, you have 100% chance of losing all of your investments if you live your life for this life only. However, a life that is lived for the Lord is very, very different from that. a life that is lived in Christ is indeed worthwhile. Galatians chapter 2 and verse 20, Paul would say, I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live. Do you see what he's saying here? He's saying, there's been a time where I've lived my life, and I've lived it for me, and I've lived it for this world, but now that man has been crucified. I have been crucified with Christ, and it's no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me, and the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. Now let me show you why this life is very worthwhile. A life that is lived for Christ, why it is so worthwhile. Turn to 2 Timothy chapter 4. 2 Timothy chapter 4. This is that same man, Paul, the same man who said, I have been crucified, and the life that I now live, I live by faith in the Son of God. He is now at the end of his life. He knows that death is certain. He's looking back on his life. He's also looking to the future of what lies ahead. And listen to what he says. 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 6. I am already being poured out as a drink offering. And the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day, and not to me only, but also to all who have loved his appearing. Two ladders leaned up against two different walls. One man gets to the top and despairs because it was the wrong wall. The other man climbs to the top, rejoicing, seeing that his whole life's work he's going to be able to carry with him because he's laid up his treasures in heaven. And his reward, he's going to be able to enjoy for all eternity. He's not going to lose it when he breathes his last breath. Do you see the difference? Do you see why one life is not worth living and the other life is very much worth living? You've been given a life. You're living it right now. Most of you in this audience are relatively young. Hopefully, Lord willing, you have many years ahead of you. But you're already starting to climb some ladder. And what I'm pleading with you tonight is to really examine whether that ladder is leaned against the right wall. Where are you putting your investments? There's nothing wrong with trying to learn and grow even in worldly wisdom. But don't make that your chief pursuit. There's nothing wrong with you making money and even becoming wealthy. But don't make that your chief pursuit. That is not what gives life purpose and meaning. Fear God and keep His commandments. That is your whole duty. You climb that ladder, and at the end of life, you, like Paul, can look back and say, I've finished the race. I've kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me my reward. All that I've been pursuing, the work that I've been putting into this, the effort I've been putting forth to climb this ladder will now find its reward throughout all eternity. Solomon is trying to tell us that. God is trying to tell us that. If you're not a Christian tonight, I hope you won't spend another day climbing the wrong ladder and wasting the precious time that God has given you. I pray tonight that you'll be baptized into Christ, crucify that old man, and the life that you'll live from here on out is a life that is in Christ, reverencing God, following His commandments, so that on that day when you are called before Almighty God to stand in judgment, you will find your reward and not condemnation. If you're not a faithful Christian right now, don't spend another day pursuing something that will cost you your soul. Turn to the Lord. Find your purpose. Find your meaning. Find your reward. If we can help you, would you come while we stand, while we sing?